Action.
Hi, I'm Russ.
And I'm Sean.
And we're two dads who love watching
and talking about
movies. On this podcast, we are chatting about the 2009 film District 9. We have been watching movies together since we were 10 years old in Sean's basement.
That's my basement.
34 plus 1 is 35. Years later, we're back in the basement.
Russ's basement now.
In this podcast, we're going to mispronounce words.
Forget actors' names.
And most importantly, have fun. This is Just Another Review Podcast.
I like this and you like that. It's Just Another Review Podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, because it's now.
Now.
Speaking of mispronouncing words.
What did you mispronounce?
Well, this podcast was recommended by listener Ian.
Ian
from high school. So thank you, Ian, for recommending and listening. He said... He gave us kudos about a recent episode about Conan the Barbarian.
Right.
He said it was very funny. He laughed. So I'm like, okay, I'll go back to it. Because I don't like to listen to our podcast, especially right away, because I like distance. I want to forget what we talked about.
And you've listened to me just long enough, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Sure. It's probably more me than you, but that I have an issue with. So I re-listened to Conan O'Brien.
Conan O'Brien?
Conan O'Brien.
Conan Librarian.
He's the late-night talk show in Hyrule, which is the Legends of Zelda world. I had to think of like a fantasy
world. He's the Lamentation of the Women.
Please welcome the Lamentation of the Women.
Please welcome Laminated Women.
I put them through the laminator. Now they're all shiny.
And then what does Andy say? Oh, okay, that's great, Conan. That's great.
That's Andy Richter?
Yeah, I don't know. He's the sidekick, right?
Anyways, unlike this episode, that episode was pretty funny. And I agreed with Ian. I laughed. I lolled. Mainly because of your tirade about Dungeons & Dragons, which was very funny.
Oh, but oh, yeah.
Good thing we have this preface of we mispronounce words. Because we said, instead of saying Oppenheimer, we said Oppenheimer. Every time we talked to them about the film Oppenheimer. And we also said, I said Geraldo instead of Geraldo.
Right.
And I'm just shaking my head, smacking myself, not in the good way, smacking myself. Quite disappointed that that we do actually fulfill the promises that we do mispronounce words. So I appreciate people sticking around and listening to the podcast, despite the fact that we are idiots.
Go fuck yourself.
That's not Sean. That is Tom Cruise.
That is Tom Cruise.
That is last movie star Tom Cruise. This episode, we're talking about the 2009 film called District 9.
No Tom Cruise in this movie, is there?
Well, you know, how would have been like?
I don't know.
I think he could have
done better acting.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
This was directed by Neil Blomkamp, South American African turned Canadian.
Turned Canadian.
He moved to Canada, Vancouver specifically, back in around 1996. I don't know where he's living now. Prior to the film, he had...
Did you know where he was living before?
Well, he moved from South Africa to
Vancouver. But you know specifically in Vancouver
where he lived? I don't know his address, but I just know he moved to Vancouver.
We'll find you, Neil.
We'll find you, Neil.
We'll find you.
Neil's done such films and movies as Elysium.
Nice.
Chappie.
Nice.
And lesser-known ones, Demonic. Yeah,
I watched the trailer for that last night. It looks questionable, very questionable.
I'm sure it is questionable.
Did you see it?
I didn't.
So it's like...
I haven't even seen Chappie.
Okay, so I guess the premise is there's some lady's psycho mom is in a coma.
Psycho mom?
Yeah, her mom went psycho, and then they put her into a coma... She's in some sort of virtual reality world, and then they send her daughter into this virtual reality world, and it somehow unlocks a demon. And then there's a whole bunch of a horror story aspect of it when she's out of the virtual reality world, but yet she keeps flip-flopping into it. I don't know. It looks
silly. Very high concept.
Yeah.
Maybe it didn't work. And he also did that recent 2023 movie, Gran Turismo.
I like the video game.
Or Turismo?
Turismo.
Okay. Because it's based off a video game.
Yeah.
And you've played said video game.
Yeah. It's so good. Is it good? Oh, yeah. It's great.
You play it on the box or you play it
on the PlayStation 5. PlayStation. Yeah. It's a PlayStation exclusive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The
Real Driving Simulator is its tech. Gran Turismo, the Real Driving Simulator. It's good. Interesting. It's fun.
I feel like when you go to the arcade and those big car games that you can actually get into, aren't those sometimes Gran Turismos as well? No, never.
No, I don't know. Maybe. I haven't seen one that's grand. You know, it's always. I did one recently at the Rec Room in Burnaby, and it was an IndyCar simulator.
Right.
And man, yeah, I like, kept not peeling out everywhere.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
I couldn't drive it straight. So instead of trying to just drive it properly, I just focused on ramming into my friend Yuri, who was driving beside me.
So you rammed Yuri.
Yeah, I rammed Yuri.
Shout out to the Rec Room. Which I don't know if that's just a local thing or if it's across North America, but it's a place where you can go play arcades and drink alcohol.
Yeah, it's like an adult arcade. I guess like...
kids can go too.
Can they go in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah.
I've gone to children's birthday parties there.
Mm. You know what? We went
fun to... Fun for the whole family.
Last weekend we went and checked out the... It's in Surrey. It's called the Central Fun City, and I guess it's kind of like an equivalent to this Rec Room, but it's got bowling and roller skating. It's a little bit more kid-orientated. So if you live in the Lower Mainland, I highly suggest you got kids, try the Surrey Central Fun City before going to the Rec Room. Save the Rec Room for your wife or some adult friends that might like to go play games.
Put the wife in the Rec Room, and then you can go to
the bowling kids
alley. Take the kids to the bowling alley.
Yeah. Anyways, back to... back to Neil Blomkamp.
But you know what he's done, which I thought maybe you would be able to speak on, is he's done a lot of those shorts with the Oat Studio.
I haven't watched all of
them. Okay, you've watched some of them.
Yeah, maybe one.
Did he direct them all?
I don't think so. I think he kind of produced them. I'm sure he directed one or two of them.
Right.
But I can't speak
to it. He's a big end of the world kind of guy. Not a lot of hope in humanity for...
Yeah, he's very, not apocalyptic, but what's the word?
Apocalyptic. End of times?
Yeah. Dystopian is what dystopian. I'm looking. That's the word I was looking
Dystopian is more positive, is it not? Like a dystopia? Isn't dystopia...
I think that's more of utopia you're thinking of.
Dystopia is like, things haven't gone well. Utopia is like, yay, things went well.
You know, I don't read a word, so I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
It's written by Neil and Terry Tatchell, produced by Mr. Peter Jackson.
Mm.
You know, I know him.
You
know what films he did?
Lord of the Rings. The Frighteners, didn't he?
The Frighteners. Yeah, he did The Frighteners. Did you ever
see? Which I haven't even seen.
Well, Michael J. Fox, right?
I know, but I haven't seen it.
Well, we should maybe watch that.
Maybe. I heard it's pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's good. Heavenly Creatures was, I think, one of those ones that was... I think you had Kate Winslet in it, maybe, but it was something that...
another one I haven't seen.
Right. It was older, but kind of made a name for himself with that, and perhaps the main protagonist there as well.
He did another one, the God of the Earrings.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the God of the...
I feel like making that up.
The God of the Necklace. The God of the... No.
What are you going to say? Lord of the Rings.
That's it.
I said that already.
Did you?
Yeah.
Sean?
But, I mean, your joke is good.
Was it?
God of the Dad.
Kind of a dad joke.
you are a dad. If you need Burnaby recommendations, ask Sean.
You're stupid.
He also did like a rated R puppet movie. You know that?
I think so. Yeah.
I don't meet the. I
know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I've gone down that rabbit hole before, but I couldn't tell you the name of it.
I'm sure I have.
I think they have like sex in it and stuff like that.
I think they do drugs.
Ooh.
And have sex. Puppets.
Have doing sex drugs before. And sex. I was like right up my alley.
South Park did it.
And you can do it too.
So who's in this movie? You asked.
I didn't, Chartel but you're going to tell me.
Copley?
Shartlow, that's quite the name.
Shelter.
Now, is that a South African name?
Yeah, he's from South Africa.
Right.
Him and Neil, they both grew up together.
I did not know that. Neil likes to use this guy. He was in Chappie as well.
And in Elysium.
And Elysium?
Yep. He's the bad guy in Elysium. He's like a complete...
Oh, right. And like he actually was hardcore. Chappie in Chappie. Right.
Right.
Yeah. He was a good bad guy in Elysium, actually. Yeah. He was dirty and stingy and...
Shartlow, he transforms with his roles. Like you almost wouldn't recognize him from one role to the next. Cause he's also in like Maleficent, which I find like he plays like a really, despite your thoughts of Maleficent and,
I have no thoughts.
You have no thoughts. Have you ever seen the first Maleficent? Not bad.
Bits and pieces, and but I can't comment on it.
No, don't comment.
I won't.
That wouldn't stop you before.
It hasn't. It sucks.
Shartlow plays Vikus von dem Meer.
Who's that?
It's spelt W-I-K-U-S, but I think it's pronounced Vikus. So I think in order for us to save face, we'll just...
I see.
Vikus from now on.
Instead, it's not Wickus, it's actually Vickus. It's
pronounced Vickus.
Okay, okay, let's do that. I'll try and do that from now.
Jason Cope also is here, and he plays Christopher. Like, he pretty much plays all the aliens.
Okay, so he was the mocap guy. He wore the suit on set.
They didn't do mocap, though. They did, like, he did some sort of suit. They did the rotor, like, same thing they did in that show that you love, that World War One-two movie.
Lord of the Necklaces. Okay.
Remember that show that
Explain
we did
it.
For... So I think they just filmed it, and then they drew over top of him. Like, they didn't... they used... Like,
right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Versus, like, motion capture. They only
Right, but
used
he
that
had a marker end. Suit on.
He did
so
have
they,
some
they,
sort of
They
thing.
Do kind of... calculate those data movements right. through those markers and stuff. But yeah, exactly. They film them and then they
did a rotomation or whatever.
Yeah.
And they rendered it to like a
paint them out
photo reel. Yeah.
And exactly. then do the CG. Yeah.
Okay. So he did that. He did, he did all the characters, and he also played kind of one of the, UKNR chief correspondent, Gray Bardenham. He was one of the interviewer guys as well.
Oh, okay. A documentary.
Yeah. When they were going back and forth between the documentary to the film. David James is also in here. He plays Colonel Kubas.
The bad guy.
Yeah. That sounds like a Super Mario villain. Kubas. You know, we mentioned that this movie was recommended to us by Ian. If Ian was to look like anyone in this movie, he would look like Kubas. That's not supposed to be a joke. I'm just painting a mental picture for the listener. They're like, I wonder who this Ian guy is that recommended this movie. Well, just think of Kubas.
Nathalie. It's like Natalie, but with an H.
Bolt.
Her parents had a lisp when they named her.
The doctor said, what's her name?
What's the name of your child?
Nathalie. Thank you very much.
Excuse me?
Nathalie. She's a lovely baby.
How do you spell that, nurse?
I think it's...
Just spell it in Greek and someone will figure it out.
Spell it like it sound. She plays Sarah Livingston, a sociologist at Kempton's Park University. She's quite a looker.
Who's this one?
So this is another one of the correspondents. Like they would always like cut back to her and she would talk. And I was like, why do I recognize her? She's actually played some care. She was in Riverdale. She was one of like the, do you never watch Riverdale?
I don't do Riverdale.
You know, I don't necessarily.
Am I going to be doing Riverdale though when my girls get a little bit older?
I mean, there'd probably be so much content that they may never get to it, but they may I think kids loved it at one point.
Okay.
They filmed Riverdale where we live.
Right.
And so I was out in my office doing my work one day and I heard all this screaming and I looked outside and it was all the actors in Riverdale like leaving a vehicle to go into another building. And there were like local high school students who came just to like fangirl.
Get this quick glimpse.
Yeah. I thought it was maybe like a film shot or maybe they were doing,
but no,
something.
It was real life.
It was real life.
Man.
Screaming at this. So at the top peak of the Riverdale, it was live and well in our,
I'm so excited.
That's kind of right. They
I'm
were.
I'm so excited.
Eugene Wanagwa Kumba.
Eugene Marijuana Kumawama.
He plays the paralyzed psychopath Nigerian gang leader.
He was paralyzed?
Well, he was in his wheelchair.
Oh, I never realized he was in a wheelchair.
Oh, really?
I just thought he was just so gangster. He just sat down the whole time and like nothing scared him.
But they wheeled him out and everything.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Vanessa Haywood is Tanya Smith Vandermeer. She plays the wife.
Right.
Maddie Geruka plays the trainee.
Right, his little...
Madla.
Yep.
And Louis Menard plays the father-in-law, the managing director of MNU South Africa. So a lot of South African actors, not necessarily any kind of staying power in the Hollywood other than Vickus.
Give me your best South African accent.
Oh, right, prawn... That's what this is where my South African this is where my South African accent stems from, is watching this movie as a young person.
What? Just, you're a prone, hey?
Like you, Oi? Sometimes people when they're doing accent, they need that word like bottleshipgalactica. Like they need like they find your Russian.
Yeah, right.
How do you find your South African? You say prone.
Right. You have a certain saint. Yeah. Prone
from this movie.
Prone.
What's happening? Prone. The movie made $210 million worldwide.
How much did it cost to make?
$30 million.
Damn,
they made some money. Do you remember the viral video aspect of the promotion of this film. I think it was around the obviously YouTube's growing, like online videos are growing.
I had my own computer at that time.
Maybe not. But they would put almost like the real footage, how the movie goes back and forth between like what it looks like to be real footage to film.
From cinematic to documentary.
But they almost like presented it as if it more focusing on like the real documentary style of it. Mm. And I remember it being like, but like giving, like I think focusing also on the MNU kind of company first, and then like that it's a little bit, something's going on here. And so it was a little bit cryptic and a little bit like asking questions and getting people really crazed. And so it was a very good.
Nice little viral marketing campaign. Eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Like Cloverfield and right. like Prometheus did things like that too. They kind of advertised the evil corporation sort of behind the sort of subplot stuff of their movies and all that kind of
smart
stuff. Yeah, it's smart. Great marketing campaign.
A24 shit.
Whoa, Russ.
Oh, sorry. They're really good at
marketing. There we go. There's the first swear.
When you swear, you put money in the jar, and eventually that money goes to charity.
Something. Exactly. Something.
Yep.
Something better than our own pockets.
This movie was nominated for 4 Oscars.
Oh.
Best Action. Best Action Picture. Adapted Screenplay, Editing, Visual
Effects. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. It was a pretty big deal.
Was that the year where they nominated 10 movies for Best Picture?
It's quite possible.
I don't think so, though.
I think that was
a newer thing. This is the 1982. What year did this come out? Where's your notes? Damn it. 2009.
Yeah.
2009.
I can look it up for you.
2009.
2009.
In 2009, I was...
Can you guess?
Where was I?
My favorite... Oh, Inglourious Basterds. That was the Inglourious Basterds.
Let's see. That Inglourious Basterds won that year?
Yeah. Best picture? I don't know if they won, but they definitely... that was definitely the year. What won Best Picture? If it wasn't Inglourious Basterds... What was it? Let's find out. You can, why don't you filibuster?
Okay. Well, where's my filibuster music? Damn it. Damn it.
My little buttercup has the sweetest
This
smile.
Is an excerpt from The Three Amigos. This movie is one of our highest rated Jart movies of all time. We did this just before The Great Outdoors.
Oh, you know what it is? It's The Hurt Locker.
Oh, it was the Hurt Locker year.
Hurt Locker year.
All right. Jeremy Renner and Catherine Bigelow, right?
That's right.
Nice.
All right, ready to get into this?
I'm ready.
We've
Are you ready?
Wasted enough time.
Let's do Thanks it. For sticking around.
In 1982, malnourished and diseased occupants of a spaceship arrived with an Earth's atmosphere. Resting above Johannesburg, South Africa.
It's Johannesburg.
Luckily for them, South Africans were really, really, really good at segregation, and the aliens were moved to a camp called District 9, where they were forced to live in poverty and addicted to cat food. For the next 20 years, Christopher Johnson and Paul, best friends forever, searched District 9 for spaceship fuel so they could fly the mothership back to their home planet. On the exact same day they collected enough fuel to enact their plan, the South African government and the weapon manufacturer Multinational United initiates an aggressive campaign to relocate the aliens outside Johannesburg. The project is led by speciesist Vickis, who derails the aliens' plans by uncovering a secret room where Vickis gets infected, starts to turn alien, and somewhat disingenuously helps Christopher and his son CJ get off this damn forbidden planet. Beautiful.
That was nice.
It was nice.
I guess I needed a little bit longer of a clip there, though. That was good. Although you stole my line.
So,
best friends forever.
Best friends forever. This was a very troubling shoot.
Production. How so?
Well, first of all, they were going to make the movie called Halo. And that was the initiation of getting this group of people together. And then the studios wouldn't, because there was different rights, and they wouldn't get along, so it wasn't going to happen. But because Peter Jackson had a little bit of sway and some money behind him, he said, well, let's use this momentum and let's just...
make something anyways.
Well, and I guess it's based off a short film that Neil had done mm-hmm. previously. So I think that was Fran's idea. She's like, well, you know, you've got this idea. Let's make this a full feature film and do something in South Africa. So it kind of was a blending and then putting some backing behind a new exciting director. So the fact that it was never potentially going to be made in the first place, but they create an opportunity for itself and then they made it and they show up and they're actually filming. That's not a set. They're actually filming in a location,
a slum
that had been recently,
evacuated,
where the government had actually taken.
I'm just trying to say something.
No, here, that's good. All. That's good. The government had taken people out to like a new area
location,
a new location. Correct. And so the materials that they're working within is all real.
Right.
Super dangerous. They had to build like a fence around the area that they were filming to prevent people from coming in and just like stealing metal and shit and just like collecting stuff to sell. There is like dead animals, asbestos everywhere, like just huge rats.
So if this was in the States, they probably would have never gotten insurance to shoot.
Yeah, exactly. If this was nowadays, this would have never.
Yeah, the studio would have been, no one's insuring us to shoot here. That's
just
it.
Like the logistics of like
working. Do it in the volume this crap. Instead.
So many things like preventing this movie from actually being successful. It's amazing that it did so well.
Did they hit any major roadblocks throughout production? Like you said, they had all these kind of procedures in place for safety and stuff like that, but did anything actually happen during production where things got halted or anything like that?
I don't know if there was any halt, and there was definitely Zimbabweans. There was like a bunch of like people who were fleeing Zimbabwe, and so they were like coming in, and then but the South Africans were like super upset that they were there. So like I think one of the days before shooting, there is actually this attack, like the South Africans attacked all these Zimbabweans and killed them.
Oh,
so there was like the shots of like the civil unrest and like the rioting were actually like real collections of people for real reasons that they were just feeding off. Mm-hmm. So like despite the fact like Neil comments like this, he wasn't intending to make a political film, but the fact that he's doing it in South Africa because of the long history of the blacks versus the whites and then Nelson Mandela and all the things that you can't help but think about South Africa's history. But also there was like tension happening at that time, which also like was a good mirror of what was happening in the film as well, which I don't think was his necessary intention, but it was hard not to make that connection.
Yeah, I think, I don't know much about the history of South Africa and all that kind of stuff. So, but you could sort of tell that Neil had some sort of underlying message here, or you know, some sort of connection. The story itself, District 9, had a connection to South Africa, not only just being serving as its location for the movie, but some of the similar themes of what had happened there in the past too, I imagine, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And the camps and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, the segregation and stuff. He didn't want to make a direct, like, this is my statement, but he knew that he loved South Africa and Johannesburg and he wanted to do something there. And he finds the city so fascinating in the way of, like, just the separation between classes and just like how you can drive from like a very impoverished area to like a business district.
Would have been nice to see some scenes that weren't in the slum of South Africa. Like I know nothing about South Africa. I have no idea even what the the city itself looks like. It would have been nice to maybe have some shots.
There is some like wide shots of the government building. Again, like the building. Did you watch this movie?
I don't know.
Oh no, you didn't watch it.
I did. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. I've gotten up at like 5 a.m. to finish movies sometimes because
you're good.
Yeah, but you can't watch Gremlins or Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, I know.
I'm never gonna let him forget that.
Never gonna let you down.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna hurt you. Okay.
Wrong verse, Pride.
You could tell Neil comes from a visual effects background. I think he got the most out of his budget as far as visual effects. And I remember at the time watching this movie that these were like super photorealistic, yeah, groundbreaking, and still to this day stands up pretty good.
It stands up pretty good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I like, and I would assume that Peter Jackson being involved, like he's learned some stuff doing Gollum and using all the...
Well, you got a note here that he was able to utilize Weta for this, yep, right? Yeah, yeah. And they were doing some great stuff. They'd already started the Lord of the Rings, right?
Oh, yeah. Lord of the Rings had already started.
It had been gone and completed, yeah, by then? Okay, yeah, so they had a good handle on photorealistic visual effects.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings was like 2001 to 2003.
Okay.
He did King Kong. And one of the things in 2005, one of the things I really liked about King Kong, that it was like... You could see the damage. You could see, like, it wasn't just a big ape. It was like he was scarred, and you could see he was in the fights. And that was also, I found, with these aliens, the prawns in District 9, like, they all had, there was uniqueness about them, like, whether it's blood or just, like, you could tell they've been in fights or what have you. I thought that was really good. It adds character to something that is not character. The film like gets your attention right away. I think the things that I recalled watching this back in 2009 was the whole, like, why did Vikas, like, because they even, when they're doing the documentary in the beginning, they're talking about, like, you see this Vikas character, but then they're like, yeah, we don't know why he made the decisions.
Yeah, and you're kind of like, oh, what are they talking
about? Yeah, then right away you're kind of like, oh, yeah. And then even, like, we're watching this again, I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, I forgot about that. Like,
they're kind of setting you up with a question. Something's happened, like we're kind of not showing you.
Bureaucratic rule follower somehow makes a turn somewhere in the movie, so you're automatically kind of enthralled, and you're like, okay, I'm interested. And then just the body horror stuff, as you know, we've talked about the special effects, and they did a really good job, but just the stuff that happens throughout the movie to Vikas with, like, biting off his own nails and stuff like that. Those are the images that have stuck with me. And as soon as it was just like a flood back to,
I didn't realize how gory this movie was actually. Yeah. Yeah. Like, even like the violent scenes near in the second half, you know, the gang leader's getting his head exploded with that. He gets a grenade launched into his forehead and it like explodes his head. And then it cuts to, like that sort of, it breaks the fourth wall a bit. You know, there's like a camera shot on the ground, but then there's like blood splatter on the camera lens, you know, like, so they're kind of saying, oh, there was a camera here. Kind of, I like that. I like that little.
He called it meat bag explosions. So they did like some practical effects. And I guess as they were going along, it got better and better. And explosive powder within the liquid. So it's not just special effects. It's not just digital.
So like The Boys does a lot of those organic wet explosions. Yeah. It's kind of its signature thing in The Boys universe. Like, everybody's kind of got this wet, bloody, liquefied explosions that happen all the time, like when people's heads explode.
I'm more of a girls universe.
Yeah. Girls universe?
Yeah. You ever watch the HBO show Girls?
No.
Oh, you should, instead of watching
Entourage. But we'll get to it. I did.
Maybe you should
watch The Girls. I actually got some good culture into me between last pod. We'll get to it, but
Some culture India.
I did. I like the documentary style of this, and then it flip-flops. I was trying to think, when does it cut to sort of the cinematic parts and stuff like that? But it sort of flip-flops back through it, and you don't even really notice it. I really liked it. It was done very tastefully. It's very smooth.
But they do kind of, they hold the documentary part very heavy in the beginning, and they go back to it kind of in the end to do a little bookend, and then kind of in the middle, it's more cinematic than I would say not, but they do definitely will play with like the news footage and security cam, and even just like the cool shot of when they get him into the warehouse, or getting them into the government building, and they're doing tests on them, and they're running the test footage, and it's got like the numbers are coming up, and they're doing the test, like, it's just, that's just shot really well, like, it just, and it's so
it's like grainy and realistic, right? Yeah, it's like
so objective, like, they're just like, he's no longer a human being to them, he's just a test subject.
Oh yeah, not cringy as in like, oh, like, this isn't appropriate for the women, but cringe just in how they treated him, just like a piece of meat all of a sudden.
You totally feel for this guy, for sure.
Sort of.
For a guy who is a complete asshole.
That's like
the protagonist is actually not a nice guy.
I don't know if this is a problem with this movie, or it's just the directorial choice that Neil went with, But I'm just trying to get to my note here on it. It's hard to root for this guy. I just feel sorry for Christopher the alien. And Vickis is very Patsy-like, but not completely innocent in all these atrocities that are happening. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that's a testament, because the character Vickis is a racist, is just like a rule.
He's very self-serving. Even when near 80% or very near the end of the movie, and Christopher was helping him, all willing to help, but as soon as Vickis had some sort of state of paranoia where it might not go well, he hit Christopher over the head with a shovel and then attempted to fly that spacecraft by himself. Like, what did he think he was going to be able to do?
He
was very... streamlined and focused on one thing.
And so I think that's a testament to Chartel, the actor, how good he is, the fact that we have any compassion for this terrible character, and we can actually go on this. But I think I would assume it was Neil's choice and Terry's choice, is that they wanted us to have compassion for the aliens.
I had way more compassion for Christopher and his kid than I did for Vickis.
Right.
And it even kind of sucked, because as it was going along and you were starting to feel some compassion for Vickis, all of a sudden he would do something totally shitty and fuck everything up. And then you're like, oh, like this guy, he's.
But I think that's good. You don't want to kind of root for him either.
I guess that's the cool thing
about this movie. Until he becomes more alien than human.
Yeah. And then at the very end, maybe the final shot, I actually have some empathy for
him. But there's no good humans in this movie.
No.
But there are good.
Well, the wife?
Well, the wife is questionable.
She's just a victim of circumstance.
She seems to be very impressionable with the father. Like, she
pretty much... Well, she was at first, but then I think she kind of clued in and was like, hang on, that doesn't seem like my husband, right?
Like, I don't think they give enough time with her. The movie does not, and probably because it would build more empathy that they don't want you to have for Vickis, and so they probably sideline her character a little bit more than they should.
There was probably more scenes that are on the cutting room floor. Right. Sure,
but the fact that she just seems to buy into the sex thing, like, why would any, like, you saw his wife is probably the most gorgeous person in South Africa,
and he treats her like gold,
and
like,
why would he have sex with an insect alien
random weekday while he's doing this thing?
It doesn't even make sense why anyone would, no offense Bronze, but I don't see how that would even be like a niche.
Do you think they talked about intersexual stuff, but they never showed
anything? But they showed a video of a human prostitute when they talked about... it was so maybe the prawns were paying for human prostitutes, but I don't think it's the other way
around. I wonder if they had any interracial children at that time. You know what I mean?
And they would have to hook it up to the dead cow carcass, which was a real cow carcass, by the way.
That was gross. Listen to the popping there. See that? That's them dying.
He gets so excited. This is exciting.
Yeah, this is the little kids dying. It's like, dude, you're a piece of shit. Like...
Anyways, the fact that she fell for that right away, as far as the film would show us, was pretty disappointing. But the only redeeming...
I thought that too, but she did...
The redeeming quality is that last scene where she's talking about, and she's showing the metal flower that she's
I don't believe that he's...
And she still has their wedding photo in their background.
Yeah, she hasn't given up.
It looks like there's actual a photo in the, like, an ultrasound picture. Like, if you look along the mirror, there looks like there's ultrasound pictures. Which makes me think maybe Vickis got a little bit into it before he turned prawn. Speaking of mixed species.
I've got here, it's got a very, very interesting take on the aliens. They were smart enough to take commands, but not smart enough to make them. Loose story plot about the leadership had died. Couple questions here for you. Maybe they were sent to Earth from their own civilization. Maybe they were outcast and unwanted.
Well, it's not very clear in the film, but they do make it when you listen to Neil talk about it and Terry, the other writer, talk about it. So
maybe they were like, here, take our trash, kind of thing.
Well, no, they were in space doing their thing, and this is very, and that's why the connection to insects is, because they're kind of like a hive mentality. Like, they've got workers.
Once the queen bee dies, you're kind of
fucked. That's what happened. So the elites and the queen bee died by some virus while they're out in space. So the ship, which has artificial intelligence, and you see that with
probably just found the. They found the closest planet.
Exactly, yep. And took the worker bees there. But the worker bees couldn't think for themselves immediately.
Like, didn't even know, like, hey, let's go down to the ground and explore.
So they were just, like, wilting away and dying, and then the humans kind of took him out of the ship. And then it wasn't until, like, Christopher part of the elites all along, or did he kind of evolve over time and start actually thinking for himself and coming up with a plan? To me, it makes, like, sense that
he was, like, middle management
or researcher. He was obviously intelligent.
One of the obviously a smarter cohort out of these banished group, right?
So, yeah, but it makes you wonder why none of them are, because I always wonder, why do they want to be called prawns? Like, that seems maybe discriminatory.
I don't think it was their choice. Well, I think it was just like using the N word or something.
Don't call us
like
prawns.
That.
Call us Nick. Call us our real name.
I liked how there were some things where at first I was like, oh, how did they know how to speak each other's language? And but then, you know, just some things you got to let slide because they've been there for 20 years. So you're like, okay, well, been there for 20 years. I've had enough time to learn how to communicate and stuff like that. So
Because I had to take Prawn 101.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that old footage of when they first arrived. It was all like shot on VHS and stuff like that. It looked good. I don't know. I think it helps make the visual effects stand out a little bit like that. But I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
You like that? You know what looks good? VHS.
VHS is good.
Another one of my favorite movies, True Romance, speaking of growing up in the 90s, where you've got like the two factions coming together at that showdown at the end. You've got like your heroes or the people you're kind of rooting for, Christopher, maybe Vickis. But then there's the law, and then there's like the criminal element, and then they kind of all come together a little bit unplanned, where they take each other out, helping the protagonist kind of move forward within the story. Similar to like, you know, True Romance, when they had the big like cocaine party. And then this one, it's just like the moment where they're able to actually, the government comes in and tries to take Vickis away. At the same time, they're like, no, I'm going to eat his body and take on the strength.
Yeah.
And then there's this really cool, like...
The
tech was really cool.
Yeah. Obviously, maybe they stole some things out of video games and stuff, but yeah, it was super cool. It was like when they were like cycling through all the different types of weapons and stuff like that.
Yeah, I wonder if they had developed it for Halo. Again, they had developed...
Probably, yeah. Those seem like some guns straight out of Halo, right?
Straight out of Halo!
Straight out of Halo! Crazy mother named Gusto!
Named Vickers.
I fuck your mom, but the bitch is a big hoe. Remember? CB4?
Yes. Yeah. CB4. Anything else from you? It's been...
The clicks and clacks got to me this time. I don't know why.
Yeah, the first viewing
was fun. Yeah, after a while, I don't know... Why? Maybe because I watched a little bit late at night. I was just kind of tired. They just got to me a little bit.
Like, stop clicking and clacking.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why.
Because you're a racist, I probably.
Yeah.
You're a speciest.
And I don't know. You got any asshole girlfriend father stories for me? I say her dad was quite an asshole, and I was just trying to think here, wondering, do you ever experience a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Come on,
some friction like between myself and father-in-law or like
your father-in-law. Don't speak about your father-in-law. Let's talk about past girlfriends.
Oh, past girlfriends,
and we don't have to say by names, right?
No, they were always good. Well, one of my ex-girlfriends, her father was like a martial arts black belt,
right?
So yeah. he came in, he had a great sense of humor. So he would always like threaten me, like, you do something and I'm gonna kill you, and I knew he was serious. Yeah. He didn't need a gun.
He said it as a joke, but you knew he was serious.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean, like,
I heard about this guy. Yeah, I know he's a big dude,
big guy. But that was the only I never had. Yeah, I always had good luck with father-in-laws or some.
My high school girlfriend's father just, they're both her parents, just hated me.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, made it really difficult. But
she would invite you over and they would what would
they oh, I would dinner? Just feel the burn. Oh. Yeah, and they would like.
Is it because you would like drive me up to her house and just honk the horns?
That no, I would never do that.
So you'd walk up to the door and you'd knock on the door and you'd say, "Hey, is
yeah, I'm sure I was a gentleman, home? But
you sure you were a gentleman or you were a gentleman?
I would think I was a gentleman.
Do you think they wanted her to do better? Do you think?
Yeah, was yeah, I wasn't good enough. Definitely, I was not good enough. I was unmotivated. Her mom kept saying,
"Oh, really?
Yeah."
She would say, "What are you going to do for the rest of your life,
yeah,
Sean?"
Yeah, yeah. Really? When we're in like freaking high school.
This is high school?
Yeah, and then she would talk shit to her when I was gone and be like, "Your boyfriend's unmotivated. What are you going to do with his life?" And blah, 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 blah.
And now she's like addicted to amphetamines and just like has 10 kids and she's just like rocking herself to sleep every day.
I don't
this
think
this is
so.
Your ex-girlfriend I'm talking about. I don't yeah, know who, no. what ex-girlfriend you're talking
well,
about.
Well, I don't want to use names in case maybe she listens to the podcast. I don't doubt it, though. Think
so, but you know her mom might.
No, son, like, he's just he, like... Surprise, surprise. I get a phone call. Yeah, you talking shit about me.
And her mom's really eating her words. I was wrong. He really went places.
Yeah.
He's got a podcast.
That's what I gotta say.
Unmotivated Sean. Sean, are you ready to go? Ready to rate this?
This shit is awesome.
You suck.
This is the part where we rate it. We give 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 jarps. And let you know, or now my new rating system is it better or worse than The Great Outdoors? And guess what, Matt? This is better than The Great Outdoors. The creativity of this film still feels fresh show many years later. I really like the pacing of this movie. I love Charlton Copley in this. I feel like both him and Neil, like this is like kind of the film where they made the biggest impact on kind of culture, and yeah, it was fun, really fun to go back to this movie. I'd recommend it. And even just to know the background of it, it kind of gives you some things where you're kind of like, well, I don't know. But then the more you learn about this film and the more you kind of sink into what humans versus aliens and what this all means, I feel like it kind of resonates a little bit more with you. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I thought for sure maybe you were going to rate a little bit higher the way you were talking about it. I rated it a little bit higher than you, 3.75. I think lots of my votes went towards visual effects and cinematography and editing and stuff like that. But the visual effects were amazing at the time. And like I mentioned, they still stand up. Like I said, we talked about the main issue for me was that, you know, I didn't have much empathy for Vickis and his conflict. It was an interesting directorial choice, but kind of removed me from any connection or desire to see him as the protagonist succeed. But again, now that we've talked about it, you know, I think it was a choice by the director. So maybe I wasn't supposed to feel like that as, you know, maybe my connection was supposed to be for Christopher alone and the kids. So yeah, interesting. For some reason, the clicks and clacks, like I said, kind of annoyed me on this viewing. And the supporting cast I found was pretty weak and left something to be desired. But again, for $30 million and all that and kind of, yeah, whatever. Still good enough, I think.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see if a sequel was made and they continued on the story. Certainly it's been, what, 14 years now? Yeah.
All prawns, all...
No, but like Christopher comes back and what happens, right? Can he liberate his fellow citizens? Maybe more. Yeah, exactly.
See like if Christopher can full, if they came in with their high power, like their intellect, like that Earth would be done in like seconds. Like just the fact that all their technology.
Let's actually use our weapons, right?
Like heat seeking missiles, where we all just become meat bags exploding in our individual homes.
Go fuck yourself.
That's what they do.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
What you been gazing at, Sean?
Oh no, we did that one already. Hang on.
Stargazing. This is where we talk about things that we're excited about, what we're watching, what are we doing to pass the time. Probably a streaming show, maybe even something different though. Sean, what are you got some culture? You were saying
I did. You know what? I put the Entourage down. It's done.
Okay. Well, good for you.
Okay. So I whizzed through The Bear season 2.
Right.
Excellent.
Yeah, so good.
Excellent.
What did you think about the dinner scene?
Oh, the Christmas episode was the best.
That was so
funny. Oh my God, it was so tense and everything like that. So good.
Is he still holding the fork?
Yeah. Carmi? Fuck up.
Carmi, man.
Big time. Especially at the end when he screwed up with his girlfriend being stuck in the freezer there. I understand he was very frustrated and all that.
All the characters have this in season 2. They all I love
an amazing arc,
like sometimes they like Ted Lasso is a good example where this didn't work. I feel like they spent a little bit more time with all the sub characters and I found those stories not enjoyable, but the bear did the same thing. They spent a little bit more time with all the sub characters and really well and really good. And you saw this kind of evolution of all those characters too. They progressed, they learned. Richie
was my favorite. Oh, yeah. He's loved such a good character. Watching the story arc of Richie.
But Carmy is, like you said, Carmy is the one that seems to be really held down by like just the family drama or just like going through all that stuff in his life and not able to kind of move through it.
He's got issues, and rightfully so.
You saw Christmas Dinner. Maybe in season 3.
He learns to deal with those issues.
Maybe it's all about Carmy.
Maybe.
Maybe that would be great, eh?
Maybe. I really like Richie. I want to see more Richie. I also went through Gen V, the whole season of Gen V.
Speaking of the boys.
Yeah.
Speaking of the boys.
It's a spinoff of the boys, right. A younger cast. You talked
a little bit about this last time.
Yeah, kind of like the college. Yeah, it was okay. The acting left something to be desired a little bit. The acting wasn't as good as the boys, but being in the same universe and stuff like that, I found it very interesting. It was very gory, but very kind of tongue-in-cheek gore. You know, it's melodramatic, it's campy, it's funny.
Right.
Yeah. Violent. I really like it's violent. Yeah, but funny violent. Like like Pulp Fiction violent. When the gun goes off and shoots the guy in the head in the back seat, kind of, you know, that sort of out of nowhere violence that makes you kind of giggle and laugh because it's so silly.
It's funny when he killed that kid in the back of his car.
Yeah, it was funny. And he drove that Invincible. Awesome.
Yeah.
Love it.
I haven't, I did start it and then I didn't get through the first episode.
Okay.
So I need to keep on.
Oh, episode 4 is really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It starts getting really good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Invincible season 1.
I did too. It follows kind of under the same, I mean, funny enough, Seth Rogen executive produces both of them. Mm. Falls under the same sort of vein as The Boys and Gen V, that sort of ultra violent, tongue in cheek, melodramatic superhero stuff. Like, what if Superman was a bad guy, right? Yeah. With comedy and all that. It's good.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Not many movies. I tried watching that Bottoms Up movie, I believe it's called.
Bottoms?
Yeah, or Bottoms. Just Bottoms?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. No, there you fine. Go. I didn't finish it. My wife did. She quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked Bottoms.
It was cute.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's some similar kind of actors as Theater Camp.
I still haven't watched that yet.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Theater Camp.
Band Camp?
No, I think it's called Theater Camp.
Oh.
Because Eowa was in The Bear, and she's in Bottoms as well.
Right.
I watched Bottoms recently, and I enjoyed it. And I also got into, speaking of Amazon Prime, I recently got into Jury Duty.
I've heard about this.
Like, Leah, my wife, watched it when it came out, and she was, oh, man, this is funny. And I was, and for some reason, I didn't get into it. And then I heard recently someone talking about it, and I'm like, okay, I need to give this a chance. It's really good.
Is it? Yes. I think I've only watched the first episode.
Yeah, it's really good.
Who's the main? Who's the
Hollywood?
James Marsden.
X-Men. Yeah, he's really
Cyclops.
Good.
Yeah. Cyclops. But he plays some himself, right? Yes,
He's like the one guy who's playing himself.
Yeah.
But there are like, because there's one of the actors who we recognize from like Reservation Dogs. And
yeah, there's some other.
There are other actors that you're like, ooh, wait a second.
Like supporting people. You're like, I know you from something.
Maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we wouldn't have noticed him. But but definitely, that was interesting. I did watch a movie called Flora and Son.
Flora and Son.
And that's on the Apple.
Okay.
And it's a movie about people using Apple products.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, it was interesting?
It's okay. It stars Eve Houston. Eve Houston is super good looking.
Okay.
So for that reason, I would say watch Eve Houston. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in it as well. It's fine. It's a nice movie. You could watch that with your wife and you could probably have a good time.
Okay.
But it's all like the critical character moments are around using Apple products. So it's quite funny. It didn't really dawn on me until afterwards. I'm like, oh, right. This was a 2-hour Apple commercial on an Apple streaming service.
I keep meaning to watch The Killer, the new David Fincher one on Netflix. They're supposed to be awesome.
It's really good.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah, yeah.
We talked
about this last podcast as well. Yeah, we did. And I said I watched it the first night it came out.
Jeez, my listening skills are not good, are they?
That's okay. You should really watch that movie. I don't know why it's been now 2 weeks.
I think I'm waiting to watch it with the wifey.
Okay.
And it's been...
That's nice of you.
Well, it's been some late...
You're such a nice guy.
Been some late nights when we actually get on TV, so it's kind of like... a half episode of Parks and Rec and I'm asleep.
So. Right. And the kids, you don't want the kids to be watching.
No, and exactly. Something can't watch with the kids. So it's on the docket. Maybe we can get to it tonight. I'm not sure.
Are you ready for some trivia?
Trivia?
Random movie trivia game. We've got trivia cards from that I purchased at London Drugs. There's four questions on each card. We're going to take turns asking questions. We're going to randomly pick each card. And then whoever gets the most questions right wins.
Man.
All right.
I see. I just quickly look.
I don't know. I'm not feeling too fresh, though, today.
Sure. Well, I
don't might
know.
Not be my day.
Okay.
Do you want me to ask you first?
Okay.
Yeah, I'll ask you first.
Okay.
Here we go. Oh, my gosh. In the 1963 comedy, how many times does the word mad appear in the title It's a Blank World? In the 1963 comedy, how many times does the word mad appear in the title It's a Blank World? So how many times...
Twice. It's a mad, mad world?
Four. It's a mad, 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 mad world.
I hate you.
Oh, you'll like the next one. Just reading ahead here.
In what movie does Adam Sandler go back to school at the age 27?
Well, it's not Happy, but it's Billy Madison. Who plays Martin Riggs in the Lethal Weapon movie? Mel Gibson or Danny Glover?
Oh. Riggs and Murtaugh. Now, who is who?
Who plays?
One's white, one's black.
Martin Riggs.
One's crazy.
The Lethal Weapon.
One's
movie.
Too old for Mel this Gibson. Shit. Oh. Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson, that's correct.
All right.
Speaking of segregation,
what was Quentin Tarantino's ninth feature film?
Oh, jeez. Was that. Was it The Hateful Eight? You're looking at me like...
I'm waiting for you to just say.
Is that my final answer? Because he's made a number for himself. So I feel like maybe 10 is going to be the most. So that would be then... But I don't think these cards have the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm going to say Hateful Eight. Oh, what is it?
It was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
So, because he said, I'm going to make
do 10
and retire.
Yeah. Damn, all right.
Gone with my gut
We're all
there.
Tied up. I might have a chance here.
The line, if you build it, he will come, is from what film?
Oh.
What Quentin Tarantino film?
About a yard of nightmares.
It's about
the yard of nightmares.
God of necklaces.
The yard of nightmares. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is yard. The field of dreams. That's a great. Field of dreams.
Sure. Field of dreams.
Field of dreams. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Thanks for being so kind. In Hugo,
mm-hmm.
Hugo lives in what type of building?
A train station? I've never seen that movie, but the trailer was really good.
Good guess.
What are the aliens? Oh my God, are you serious? What are the aliens in District 9 nicknamed? Giraffes, prawns, or bugs? What the hell, man?
Prawns.
Stupid card.
Didn't we have that happen last time? We had like...
There was a coincidental one, too.
Where yeah, something like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, because you were talking about
right.
it, or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, shit,
that
man.
Means synchronicity, Carl Jung's, means we're on the right track.
All right. Who was Will aligning. Smith's co-star in Men in Black?
Oh, my God. Why did... No Country for Old Men, The Fugitive. Oh, my gosh.
You know I can't read a word. You know I can't read a word.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh. All right.
What are we? I think that's it. You got.
Yeah, we're tied.
We're tied?
Oh shit. We got to do the
lightning round. No.
Okay, wait. How did we do
so
this?
We just went back to back. So we do round. So if we do one round, if you get it right and I get it wrong, you win. If we both get it right, we keep going.
Okay, it's like sudden death,
yeah, it's
right?
Sudden death.
Okay. Go.
Who wrote and starred in the 1999 film Bowfinger? Who wrote and starred in the 1999 film Bowfinger?
Warren Beatty.
Is that your final answer? Steve Martin.
Wait.
Oh, come on.
You shouldn't have said that.
Sorry, dude. Would you have gotten Steve Martin?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. What's my question?
What silent film star was the Tramp?
Charlie Chaplin.
Random movie trivia game.
Good game. High five, pounds.
Well, Ian, sorry this episode wasn't as funny as Sean riffing off a Dungeons & Dragons campaign.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But thanks for recommending that. If you have a recommendation for Just Another Review podcast, you can email us at jarppodcast@gmail.com.
Go fuck yourself.
Or that.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Love you, buddy.
Love you, too.
I like this and you like that. It's Just Another Review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, because it's now.
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 Fuck yourself.